I got you, Jeff. Thank you. Yes, Kiyoshi. You know, I was checking the weather this morning.
Hey there.
I'm up in Prince Rupert. I'm tied up in front of a big old tugboat, hit under the bow of it. It's gusting up around 50 kilometers an hour here.
Wow.
I'm gust up to 70 tomorrow, so I won't get across. I'm about 90 nautical miles away from my destination. I travel about, nautical miles, but about 700 kilometers so far up the coast. And so I'm just itching. It won't take me very long to scoot across when the weather breaks. I can surf on what's left. And then we're in good shape. We're out into the wild, no industry, renowned around the world to be one of the most untouched places on the planet. And I can testimony to that. The entire coastline of the Queen Charlotte Islands, you're looking at around 360 kilometers on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be able to go there and break off chunks with 50 or 60 scallop and 10, 20, 30 abalone.
In one chunk.
Grab
wow.
one chunk at low tide, walk out there and just grab it. Mm-hmm. And you can do that right along the entire coastline. A bunch of hot springs out there, and you don't get any really big industry work in that coastline at all. It's all regulated. There is a dive show that runs that coastline. That's how I was up there.
What?
They're extremely regulated. They have observers on board the whole 9 yards.
Oh, they do. They have a commissar on board the fishing ships to make sure the information is controlled.
Yeah, a little snitch follows you around, and he gives you a little paper every morning, tells you where you're allowed to dive, and then he monitors you, comes up, and sometimes you can't dive the spot. You don't give you an alternative spot to dive. That's what happened to me was they didn't give us an alternative spot to dive, and they give you 300,000-pound quotas, and you can't leave those areas until your quota is picked, and you got nowhere to hide. I can't remember how many of my friends they had killed with that routine. And actually, after I got injured, they changed it after that. And it was a lot safer after that. But I used to personally go in there and challenge them on it, and because it was unnecessary. The divers were only able to work a couple of percent each on the coastline, and they're only able to work certain depths. And so there's no way they can over-harvest the coastline.
Well, let me ask you a question. Well, so, they had the operation behind environmental concerns, I get it. But let me ask you, did you have a chance to talk to any of the fishing fleets up there, any of the fishing commanders or boat captains, commanders of these large organizations, I shouldn't say commanders, I should say company CEOs, or anybody? What's the fishing like going on up there now?
Well, I'm not hearing much on the fishing, but I am talking to fishermen. I'm not really getting input on that. It doesn't, what they got down here in British Columbia, everything is like real estate now. The licenses are all quotas, and they have small quotas, and then it takes them a month or 6 weeks or something to go and get their quota, and then their boat is sitting there for the rest of the year unless they have extra licenses. It doesn't appear there's much going on out there. The fish, of course, as everybody knows, are further up the food chain, and so you're definitely going to see fish out there. That's what. And I've never seen any flocks of bird all the way up here. I know I mentioned that the last time up to the top of the island, but all the way up to the north, very north, I still haven't seen any flocks of bird out there. But back on track here was, I do talk to all kinds of people. Because the nuclearproctologist.org is written on the side of the boat.
Sure.
And it's a way for people to come up and have a quick conversation. Mm-hmm. But everybody gets it right away. The minute I say I'm looking at the damage from Fukushima's Japan's melted reactors on the Canadian coastline, they all have this aha moment. And they all literally say, and this is 10 out of 10 people that I talk to, taxi drivers were telling me about this every time I get a taxi in the last couple of days to try to solve some of the issues I didn't have solved. And so everybody's tuned in, everybody believes the government is lying to them, and everybody is shocked and disturbed that the media is not telling them about this. And so that, to me, I think is a little bit of a switch. And up here, it seemed to be a bit of a switch. I hear a lot of people were telling me repeatedly up here that people got Geiger counters. They know somebody who got a Geiger counter. Or this guy is really smart, and he had to go get a Geiger counter, and he won't eat fish no more. And the last guy I was talking to was telling me he doesn't know what to do, but he's not going to eat fish anymore anyway, just to be on the safe, because everybody's talking about it. And so it seems like this community of 25,000 or so is on the ball to that extent. And I did have one fisherman who said Mother Nature has a way of cleansing itself, and it'll deal with it, blah, blah, blah. And so I just, you will get the odd one out, but the majority of them, and he was aware of it, don't get me wrong, so they were all aware of it. And I think that was a extraordinary one, or 10 out of 10. And I must say, I don't know how many people I talked to. Now every single person I've encountered, that's the conversation. But people seem to be more knowledgeable and more open to it, and they seem to be...
Are they aware of the fact that they can't do anything about it?
Right. That was exactly what I was looking for to say. And that's only because you don't have a collective rallying. You know, if we had a big meteorite coming at us, I don't think any of us would be saying we can't do anything about it. Everybody would be saying, what are we going to do about it? And we have to, you know, and I agree with what you're saying. But, I mean, we do have to have hope, right? That's the problem. And how do you give people hope with something so maniacal and twisted? That's like the gouge.
It is maniacal. It is twisted. Todd, we're going to go through this break. Yochi, step in here. Anything you have to say or ask of Dana, who is, again, obviously very tired.
I'm wondering about the catch there the fishermen are taking. Are these bottom dwellers? You know, the ocean floor is very complicated. You got trenches, all kinds. It is basically like a mountainous area. So there would be some pockets where some fish could survive, although with lower dosages, just because they're a little bit off the North Pacific and California current. And I'm wondering what the fishermen specifically, the halibut, what are they coming up with? It seems the fish at the upper level, for the pelagic, you know, the tuna, the salmon, herring, all that, has suffered a huge blow. I'm wondering what's left. What are they going for? What are they targeting? Uh-huh. And obviously, they've got to go further out very selectively. I mean, the notion that we have, you know, the idea that we have sonar makes it possible. If this was traditional fishing fleet, they would have been wiped out. But the fact that they can go out, there's ships that can go out further, farther to search and have sonar and can go deeper, you know, does maintain this idea that you could still catch fish, and because there are pockets of fish still out there. So that's my question for Dana.
There is.
What exactly do you think they're coming up with?
Well, I've done all these industries for starters, and so I'm very attuned to it. And the couple of dredgers I have seen, I was looking closely at their nets, and the nets were full of smaller fish that was left over, which is typical of what you would expect to see. Now, I didn't see any birds feeding on the way up. See, so when we talk about fish, that's what you expect to see, and then you would run over that and drop your camera down in the water and see what they were feeding on. And I haven't got a single opportunity to do that. And the whole way up, that was one of the few things I wanted to do. I was hoping to see it, because I still haven't seen that since I started this whole expedition. And it's been a very trying time the last month. We had to put a cabin on the boat, and I'm so glad we did, because that's the only way to get through the winter. And I know a lot of people that say, well, wait for spring, but the urgency of this doesn't allow me to wait for spring.
No.
You know, the only regret I'll have is if this trip is not completed. That'll be the only regret in my life, is if we don't complete the trip. And the trip has to get completed, I think, so that everybody can come to terms with it. Because I think people live in denial, thinking that, oh, it's just that part of the coastline is naked, and, you know, it'll reseed itself. No, if you plow it in, the creatures will crawl from deeper and alongside of it in hours and days and fill it back up. And that just never happened on our coastline. So that means the ocean is definitely 100% broken in every sense of the word. And that means everything else is broken behind it. The basis of everything is the ocean, always has and always will be. It's a mystery how, you know, people that we put in charge to tell us about radiation, like we see the headline now about Wade Allison, an Oxford professor, and he's saying, you know, radiation is like oxygen, it's completely innocuous and benign. And it's those words that make it hard to have a debate or a conversation. We don't really need a debate anymore because we are, as Yoshi knows also well, and of course, Jeff, you know also well, is that this is not like oxygen. This is not like potato chips. This is not like walking in sunshine. And they have to lie. So what are we supposed to do about this? Because these people won't stop that lie. And what do? Do we go after these people? Do we hire lawyers to try to set a precedence to knock down these fable makers from the airwaves? That's a strange precedent to set, you know, because they take away one person's voice, they can take away anybody else's voice with the same, you know, stick. And so how come media is the person who's supposed to be the moderator for these people doesn't step in and say, listen, you know, we apologize, the speaker's only supposed to talk about pertinent parts of the subject, and this is for serious talk, not fables. That doesn't happen. The media never steps in and says, no, you know, it's not like a potato chip. Potato chips are homeostasis. That is the issue. That's why we got all these issues. That's why we can't have a chat. And because, of course, media is 100% owned in such a bad way where their job is just to sell that one line. And so when somebody says like a potato chip or like banana, the media will come and say not all vegetables or all fruits are good for you.
Dana, would you please explain that to our listeners? When Dana says potato chip or banana, basically the story is potato chips and bananas contain radioactive material, and we eat them all the time. They don't hurt us. There's no problem at all. It's the same thing that's in the ocean, which nothing could be further from the truth. It's the biggest lie and cover-up since 3/11.
Yeah. And that's how they done it to us, was using those terminologies and using those in that context, that potassium-40, which is in all your food and in your clothing and in your water and in the ocean, uranium-238, they named one of the elements uranium-238 in the ocean, I guess, in order to confuse people. This is how it seems, because the uranium-2-chain reaction is now 2 million times worse. And they don't use potassium-40 in chain reactions. They use uranium-238 and plutonium. And the byproduct of it is not potassium. You won't see any models potassium. So basically what you ended up with was they took something that's in your life and that's good for you, and that your body has and needs, you know, dramatically, 40% of your body, I think, is using potassium-40. And so that's homeostasis. If I drink a glass of water with 7,500 becquerels of potassium-40 in it, I'll basically off-gas 7,500 becquerels of potassium-40 because my body can't hold anymore. And that's called homeostasis. And your body regulates it, like the thermostat regulates your temperature in your house, and your cruise control regulates the automobile. So it's the same thing. And so when they say that, they know it's an outrageous lie because the radioactive elements, and there's 2,000 of them all together, but a few hundred of them really long life and we're worried about, if you ingest a single one of them, it's like getting an x-ray every second because that's what a Becquerel is. A Becquerel is flipping over a grain of sand, just flipping it over to the other side. But think about that. Your body attacks that with white blood cells and displaces all the oxygen molecules that around that area, and it makes you very lazy and lethargic because you don't have this extra oxygen in your body. But that never changes. That stays like that for the rest of your life because that thing keeps putting out the energy, so your body keeps putting out the white blood cells. But a banana or a potato, you eat it, and you enjoyed it, and it was good for you, and so to speak, right, depending on how you cooked it and blah, 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 or whether it was GMO. But generally, if it's homeostasis, there's no way it can hurt you because you're acclimated to it through genetic superior selection. Everything else on the planet is. I'll just let you jump in, Jeff, because it really drives me crazy that gets used.
It's just another way of obfuscation and lies, and they'll never run out of it. They're never going to admit what's going on. The EPA, the EPA has held no news conferences. As I say, every time you're on, they lie by omission. They won't say. They won't talk. Nothing. And as I said to Yochi early on, no information, virtually nothing is coming out of Fukushima. We're not getting any hard news. They tried to pour concrete and mix it into the great frozen popsicle trench. That didn't work. And the water is flowing into the ocean now. We think it's they admit now to 400 tons a day. We think it could be 1,000 or 4,000 metric tons
a
day.
It is, and you know it is.
Yeah, sure. Nobody knows. And as Arnie Gunderson said, it's going to keep flowing into the ocean for another 100 years, another century. And you folks think the Pacific Ocean is going to survive this? It's already three-fourths dead. It's over. It's done. We've lost the world's largest fishery and food source in terms of an ocean. We've killed
it. So a sonic good fate, then. What's a sonic good fate, Jeff?
What's a what?
What would be a sonic good fate from the government at this stage, or wouldn't it?
What would be a sign of faith for me would be,
say if the government was to distribute organic seeds to every community, every household, and that all the communities would stop using pesticides, and they banned GMO immediately,
of course.
And they went to work on closing
that's right.
out the nuclear
That would
countries.
Be a real government trying to protect
That would be
people.
A sign of good faith.
Yeah. And, well, guess who's building the world's biggest seed bank now in Siberia? Vladimir Putin and Russia. They're building the biggest underground, safe, secure seed bank in the world in Siberia.
That's right.
All right, that's the second one. Now, does somebody know something's coming? Yes, they do.
Yeah, that's right.
So, it's all disgusting. Yoshi,
go ahead, Yoshi.
Yeah, that seed bank idea is sort of a sign of near apocalyptic situation we're facing, that people are actually preparing. More when after the kill off, trying to make a second, trying to make a comeback. Okay, I think that's going to be there for quite a while, this generation long gone, the generation of our children and grandchildren are long gone. That's how far along they've got to save the seed, okay, before they try to make a comeback. So
correct.
Amazing they're doing it in Russia, and not in Canada, the United States, or any of the. Europe, or it's all about Norway. There's one in the Arctic there.
That's
but again,
the only
that
other
Arctic
one,
area is massively contaminated. That
of course
Arctic
it
area is massively contaminated.
Well, the Russians are building theirs in Siberia.
Closer, much closer. Well, so anyway, the one in the Arctic is much closer to Fukushima, in an area that's been completely, essentially contaminated.
Well, these seeds, folks, let's get this straight for our listeners. These seeds are being put away to terraform the earth after some unbelievable catastrophe. That's the only reason they're being stored.
Which is happening now. Which is happening now.
Thank
you.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Four or five generations down the road. Human generation.
That's been here for nothing.
Oh, more than four or five.
Looking for the show.
It could be long. I'm being told
off. They try to make it worse.
So that's where we are, and there's just no hard news coming out of Fukushima. Meanwhile, as we speak, those wrecked, destroyed buildings and the reactors and the melted-through bases that the containment is now riddled and just completely porous, if not even gone in places, those buildings are falling apart more and more each day.
Yeah.
No one can go into reactor building 1, 2, or 3. They all have the same... It's a stupid spent fuel pool, 4 to 5 stories off the ground, and they are falling apart. They're rotting.
They're reporting a massive surge in spike in strontium now, just recently at Reactor 2, in the vicinity of Reactor 2.
That's right.
So again, there's been breakthroughs out of containment, leaving these sort of a network of underground channels burnt right through the gravel and rock. And the water welling up is accounting. So basically, the corium under reactor 2 is now somehow surging. So the nuclear reactions, are increasing, which means, the fuel, underground temperatures are rising in that water. The water circulating between broken fuel rods And we're seeing more and more reactions occurring, which does not bode well for the coming year. Unfortunately, we got this the Security Act, the National Security Act, comes into enforcement tomorrow, 2010. So the Japanese government's already given a warning to all their employees.
Oh, so tomorrow it actually takes hold. I didn't know.
It comes into effect. Yeah, midnight tonight.
That'll be the end.
12 hours, basically 12 hours. Yeah,
that'll be
12 hours from now. Less than 12 hours.
No more news.
Yeah, that's the end of it. Which is why media sources are going silent, is because the thing's coming into effect.
You watch, and all they have to do is. All they have to do is charge and imprison a couple of journalists, and everybody will be shaking in their boots. Hang on a second. We have to take a break.
Yeah.
We'll come right back. Dana Dernford up in B.C., and Yochi and I will continue. Okay, welcome back. We have, if you look at the top of Rents, we have the latest Fukushima information for you and other information as well. We try to bring it all. At least I try to gather it up. Yochi has written some brilliant articles. Dana's research is unequal on the planet. We present as much as we can for you all the time. Now, here's an interesting story that nobody would have thought about because of the misdirection and all the rest of it. All right, we lost Yochi. We'll get him back in just a minute. Plutonium.
No, I'm still here. I think you might have lost Dana there.
Oh, we lost Dana.
You might have lost Dana there.
All right, well, that's unusual.